Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when it's football and football is over. God help us, but here's the last episode. But even though football season's gone, the game's not gone. My bookie always lets you get in the game because games are always better when you're putting money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team, the Steelmen. Regardless whether you've been betting for years or if you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. If you're the kind of guy who likes to win a lot by just betting a little, you can try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. We do it. Dad and I might be able to recap you on how well we did on the prop bets for the Super Bowl, which is really the entire betting goal of the Super Bowl is prop bet based. We didn't end up betting on the Gatorade, did we? But that was a shocker. Either way, if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code CHAIRCHAIR to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Done throughout the playoffs, the Kansas City Football Chiefs overcame a 10-point deficit, scoring 21 straight points to eventually overwhelm the San Francisco Football 49ers, bringing home the city's first Super Bowl victory since 1969. Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. This is going to be a rough one. February 3rd, 2020. This is Tom coming to you from Sawdust Studios at the Washington, D.C. Outpost. And as usual, Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. And we are so glad for the second week in a row to have P. Butch joining us from the Auxiliary D.C. Outpost. I was sorry I couldn't make it last week.
Hey, we missed you, but I was happy to step in and I'm happy to be back. So, to commemorate the last weekend of football, it feels good to talk about it with you all.
It's actually probably a good thing that the Steelers, well, it's never a good thing that we're not covering the Steelers the day after a Super Bowl, but we probably wouldn't be here. We'd all still be drunk due to the victory. And if for some godforsaken reason they lost the Super Bowl, we wouldn't be here because we'd be drunk or dead or worse.
So obviously the big news is the Super Bowl, which we will cover. We're also going to talk about Troy's election to the Hall of Fame. But first, Nick, you alluded to this. Which of you guys made bets on the Super Bowl?
I did.
Go for it, Pat.
I was going to say, I did not. I have bet once in my entire life. It was in 2014. I bet $600 that the Oregon Ducks would blow the doors off of Andrew Luck's Stanford Cardinal. And I won that bet handily and have not gambled since.
Wow, you're ahead. Dude. You're playing with house money.
But if I would bet again, it would be through my bookie, obviously.
Well, you're an intelligent man of stature and taste, so of course that makes total
so
sense.
So how much money did Las Vegas lose on that Gatorade bet because everybody was counting on that being Kobe purple?
Yeah, that we decided not to bet on the Gatorade, right, just because we had heard the rumors about Kobe. But I said out loud to one of my buddies over the weekend, well, really the morning of the game, I said, we like doing the prop bets and all that kind of stuff, particularly through my bookie. It gets a little dangerous when you're betting like game to game, when you're betting, you know, big money. But I told him if I was ever going to make a big money bet. I think this is the best occasion to do it, just because I was rooting for Kansas City. I like Pat Mahomes. I don't want San Francisco to equal the Steelers in Super Bowl titles. But I was shocked that they gave us the line of having Kansas City be favored, which just seems like a reflection of Vegas realizing general public is going to see, oh, great quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. We're going to make – that's who people are going to put their money on. And I just thought it was such a good bet to put money on the Niners. So I said, oh, man, today maybe I'll put $800 on it. Well, thank God I didn't. But we have so much to say here and only a limited amount of time. So, Pat, what do you think – there's a couple things that stand out to me initially. What's like the first thing that stands out to you about the game? How the Chiefs were able to overcome a sort of lackluster start and get their third consecutive double-digit comeback to complete the Super Bowl run?
Yeah, what stood out to me, I remember I texted you at halfway through just saying this is a bad game because it was a weird game to me, you know, because neither offense really ever clicked. It felt like the 49ers could have run on them the entire time. Yeah. I think they averaged around 7 yards a carry. But for whatever reason, Jimmy Garoppolo threw 31 passes. And it just seemed like a game that played exactly into San Francisco's hands from the standpoint of they had a 10-point lead in the second half. When you have a strong running game and a defense that can rush the passer, I know the Chiefs have Mahomes, but never did he find his rhythm. You and I were talking, Nick, that yeah. even when he was completing balls, that he wasn't hitting guys in stride. And so he never, in my opinion, got in a groove. The hurry-up offense helped. It's something that – and I can't remember if I mentioned this in the pod, but I know I mentioned this to you, that I thought the Chiefs should have done hurry-up to begin just to get Mahomes in a rhythm and to wear down those San Francisco pass rushers. Yeah. But really what stood out to me was, you know, the San Francisco overall game plan. Which is having Jimmy Garoppolo pass 31 times. Everyone thought that was the key for the Chiefs to win, was to put the ball in Garoppolo's hands. And I thought I was happy the 49ers lost, because had they won, Garoppolo's stats early on before he began having to throw the ball seemed great. High completion percentage, but all of his passes were to wide open receivers.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I was shocked at the 49ers' overall game plan, and then I was happy to see Garoppolo wilt like a flower in the rain, as he eventually did.
Yeah, we said it the whole year. That's what was going to happen, and it doesn't surprise me at all that it did. Now, I'd have to go back and rewatch the game to see how well the 49ers ran the ball initially, because you're right. If you look at the stats, they actually had a pretty solid average. And, it seems like in any of these prior games, as long as they just commit, maybe it's not like Green Bay when every single solitary carry was going for 5-plus yards, if not 40 yards, but it did seem like they were able to run the ball. Each team kind of had one drive where they looked like themselves. I think the Niners had one drive in the middle there where they had 5 or 6 straight 10-yard plays, just knocking off first downs and nonstop, a couple 10-yard runs and everything like that. It is... So, but here's the rub, because everyone blames there's people blaming Kyle Shanahan for the loss, and he definitely wasn't perfect. And, you know, them playing it close to the vest at the end of the first half was the most shocking one, where they were tied at 10-10. They force the Chiefs to punt with like 1:47 left, and then he lets the clock run all the way down. And I'm yelling at the TV, like, what are you? You're losing 40 seconds here. You and I have talked about this a lot. Sometimes people think, oh, I want to have more timeouts for when I'm on offense. But you got to do some simple math. If you're letting 40 seconds run off the clock, it's like, how long does it take for you to run a hurry up snap, especially when you already have, you know, two other timeouts that would be left over? What is it, 12 to 15 seconds to get another playoff? So you could get at least 3 other plays off in the time that you let expire. So I'm thinking this is weird. Then he runs the ball 2 consecutive times just to run the clock out. And then they hit like a 30-yard pass play, and they're thinking, oh, crap, we could have scored some points here. It was just so weird to see a team in the Super Bowl get the ball back, 3 timeouts, tie game, second quarter, 1:47 left to play, and to not really play to win. So that's the big thing for Shanahan. But my thing with Garoppolo is that when you
he's
watch
a bum.
He's a bum. He really is. When you watch the replays, and they're all over Twitter, you don't need to look at the replay. You could have seen it on live TV. So many of the plays, the second and third downs that he didn't complete, they're wide open one-read throws to George Kittle, who's uncovered, and the guy can't even throw the ball to him. So I would have to go back and look at maybe the Chiefs were able to stop. I mean, they definitely were able to stop San Francisco's run game more than the prior two teams they faced had, the Vikings and the Packers. But, yeah, I don't know. They just crumbled. And to me, Garoppolo is a huge part of that, missing Emmanuel Sanders on that deep post route at the end of the game. Of course he did. Not being able to complete passes to literally wide open receivers on second and third and five. And then, yeah, and then if you give Mahomes too much time, Mahomes' version of a bad game is pretty much anyone else's good game, and he won the game at the very end. He did a great job by the end, even though he didn't look comfortable for even a single moment throughout the whole game, in my opinion.
Which was odd. You thought, because, you know, I've said all year, and I've told you this, that I don't think since week three the Chiefs have been the Chiefs since last year. Even – I said this last week on the podcast. But they've always had like flickers of last year's team, and they didn't, in my opinion, at any point. I think clearly Mahomes was unsettled all game, but they still put up 31 points.
That's the thing, and I thought that a lot of it was Mahomes. It did remind me of, you know, seeing some other big quarterbacks playing big games like that. They were also calling a lot of plays that were sort of designed throws, if you will. But I honestly don't think that was that bad of a game plan. At first, I was kind of saying, like, why don't you just unleash him? And I do agree with you. It would have been interesting to see what Kansas City could have done if they just unleashed Mahomes earlier. But that pass rush for San Francisco was as good as everyone thought it was. And they were getting there every time. And all these plays where Pat Mahomes has been crushing teams recently, where he scrambles out to the right, gets the sideline and either runs or makes a long throw. You know, Bosa and Ford, these other guys, they were able, Armstead even, they were able to string him out and either push him out of bounds, force a throwaway, or absolutely crush him. And the thing is, since you only score 20 points on offense when you're the Niners, by the fourth quarter, that pass rush was not nearly as fast, and that's when you saw the Chiefs really light it up. I think Mahomes' stats after the second interception, I wish I could pull them up, but it was crazy. It was like 12 of 14 for 130 and two touchdowns or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think just he didn't start to wear the pass rush down, and he didn't start to look good until 7 minutes left in the game when they went to the hurry-up offense, which is something, again, I advocated for from the start, just to wear down the San Francisco pass rush. And it's something I thought maybe the Niners should have done. You know, I referenced the Oregon bet I put back in 2014 or 2013.
That's right.
And part of me thought that Niners should have done that. Go to an Oregon-style Chip Kelly type of offense and just hurry, like lightning fast paced, and maybe the Chiefs stay with you and can stuff your run early on, but when it gets to the later portion of the game, the second half, then they're dead tired and you just gash them over and over again. It was I don't know, I'm just happy Garoppolo lost.
Me too. Okay, so Pat, I don't know if we actually had a little technological difficulty right there. I hate that phrase, but no use in explaining it. We were talking about how the 49ers pass rush clearly seemed to get tired by the end of the game, and where Patrick Mahomes, you know, he seemed tight the entire game until the very like last 6 minutes. And I think we always say this with Ben and these guys who are artists throwing the football, not these nerds like Brady, Rivers, you throw the check down. No, we're talking about men who sling the ball downfield. You need to hit one of those deep passes to sort of like knock the saran wrap, I've noticed, and to get the confidence you need. And I just kept saying that with Mahomes, and he needs to just hit a deep one or two in a row so he knows, like, oh, okay, here's what we do. I fade back in the pocket. Instead of stepping up, I just keep drifting back, and then I throw a 90-mile-per-hour piss missile down the field to Tyreek Hill, and we score touchdowns. But that never happened. But I don't necessarily think that it was all the fault of Mahomes and the play calling, even though I do think both seemed a little conservative. I think part of it is also that that pass rush was unbelievably ferocious, and they definitely wore down by the fourth quarter. Now, so you were saying that the Chiefs should have maybe run some hurry up earlier in the game to force that defense to tire out more quickly, and then you were even saying that the Niners should have run some of that
as well. I just think that I was such a huge proponent, and I know Chip Kelly didn't succeed in the NFL, but when you have speed on your team, you can wear down another team's defense and pass rush by keeping them on the field and then just running a mass amount of offensive plays. It also gets your offense in rhythm. You know, your quarterback can kind of call plays to his liking that he feels comfortable with. And I think, yes, the Niners' pass defense wore down in the fourth quarter, but I think it's not a coincidence that it also showed its wear and tear when Mahomes finally went to the hurry-up offense. I don't think it's a coincidence either that Mahomes started to look good. Now, Garoppolo will never look good because he stinks. He's a bum. No, he's not good. You know what? So I've heard some people say –
You don't like him because he's friends with Brady.
I hate quarterbacks and players – who it's just generally accepted that they're really great and nobody stops to question and ask why or look at maybe they're a product 100%. Of a really good system. Oh, hey, Garoppolo threw 8 passes in the conference championship. Maybe I could have done that and also won the conference championship against the Packers. Like me, 5'7" Patrick Butcher. Yeah.
No, you could do it. You can chuck them. But exactly. That's why I think it's hilarious that for some reason like Shanahan, for whatever reason, gets all of the blame for this Falcons Super Bowl, even though there's a defense that gave up 25 freaking points in basically one quarter. And simultaneously here, like we can post some of the Chris Sims posted some of the stills. You know, he posted a bunch of videos of the replays, and I was screaming it while it was happening. I remember one of the 3rd and 5s, San Francisco came out with a trips, 3 receivers out to the right side, Kittle being one of them, and saying before the play started, say, okay, they're going to run a pick for Kittle because it's trips. All you're trying to do is bunch everybody up, and they're going to throw the ball to the very best guy. Sure enough, they did. He's wide open, and he can't even hit him. And if this were Ben... He would Fietner be getting any criticism at all by the national media? No. People would be massacring Ben for choking or whatever, or Rodgers for choking. But if it's, you know, there are some people who – it's just weird how these narratives shift. I guess it's because people acknowledge that Shanahan kind of is the main man in that Atlanta equation, even though they had a lot of stars, and in the San Francisco equation. But I guess let's see if we can get some sort of – a flow to talk about some other things. What about Patrick Mahomes in general? I know we've kind of touched upon it initially, but what do you think about Mahomes' ability to win that Super Bowl? What do you think it means for him winning at this age? And the fact that we both agree that they were underwhelming offensively and they scored 31 points on a phenomenal defense, the number one defense.
It was funny. When I was writing down some notes last night, I was trying to think of other times youngish quarterbacks have won that first Super Bowl. You know, one. And then people, you know, analysts and, you know, the media saying this is the beginning of a dynasty from the standpoint of like repetitive Super Bowl appearances. And the one that comes to mind is like Aaron Rodgers, right? Brett Favre, they said that about him.
Nope.
Russell Wilson has been to 2, but Mahomes is clearly one of the top 5 quarterback, clearly arguably the best quarterback, probably the best quarterback. I heard some people saying he's the only one who could have led a team back against the Niners defense last night. I think that's blatantly not true. Russell Wilson did it twice, even though it was a delayed game that didn't allow him to win the last game. I think, you know, Rodgers with a good supporting cast could do it. So I don't think Mahomes is alone there.
Ben Roethlisberger could do it.
And like to your question, I think the Chiefs are in a prime position because for the first time we have a vacuum potentially in the AFC with the decline of Tom Brady and the Patriots, who will still be there, but there's there's not that perennial champion that you have to knock out every year. So I think the Chiefs could take it, and I don't see why you couldn't say it's Mahomes, but I'm not willing to say they're going to be in the Super Bowl every year.
No, of course not. They're going to lose some guys soon here. I mean, Mahomes is about to get paid big time. Chris Jones needs to get paid. Watkins is already making money. Who knows what they end up doing with Hill and with these other guys. But they certainly have a chance to repeat. I mean, the AFC next year, it all depends on how Ben and Brady recover. You know, if New England gets a couple pass catchers and Brady stays, I don't see why they're not going to be totally in the mix. And the same with the Steelers. I mean, I think, honestly, the Steelers defense might be better than the 49ers defense, because the Steelers had the worst offense in the league and constantly going three and out and surrendering field position. And the Steelers still led the league. Were we first in sacks and turnovers? At least like top two or top three in both of them. But it's the same thing. We're just freakishly fast. And so the Steelers, actually, everything rides on Ben's arm healing, which, by the way, there was Ron Cook from the Post-Gazette put out an update today. Ben's going out to California to see the doctors February 21st, and hopefully they're going to be able to clear him to throw some light objects like tennis balls and stuff like that, which is, I know it sounds funny, but it is encouraging. I mean, Andrew Luck, before his awesome comeback season, he was throwing tennis balls, I want to say, and like it was like by May or something. So Ben allegedly still on schedule. Now, just for the MVP talk, I know some people are whining about Mahomes winning the MVP. I totally disagree with the assessment that somebody else should have won it. I just think that there wasn't an impressive MVP this year, like a Nick Foles, like a slam dunk type of candidate. And also, I think when everybody imagined Mahomes would be the MVP, you imagined it would be in this 350-yard, three-touchdown, no-pick Mahomesian performance. And that's not what we got. But some people are saying Damian Williams should have been the MVP, which at what point was Damian Williams the best player in the game? Damian Williams just had a good game, and he's the least famous of the Chiefs' skill position players. So he was critical to their success, but he wasn't the best player in the game. He wasn't even borderline on what a James White did for the Patriots, unfortunately, a couple years ago with his 11 catches or whatever it was. So he played well. I don't think that it's just the perfunctory, oh, we're going to give the quarterback of the winning team the award. Obviously, we know there's bias against that, too, and San Antonio got it over Ben. But I think that he deserved, it's not like a slam dunk, you know, MVP, but I don't think that there's another guy in the Chiefs I would have given it to besides Andy Reid's chef, who's clearly feeding the right.
First of all, let me just say, can we just say good for Andy Reid? I made a note to say it from the outset. Couldn't be happier he finally won one. He's truly one of the best coaches the last 20, 25 years. Always getting his teams in the playoffs, whether it's Donovan McNabb at quarterback or Michael Vick or Nick Foles was his guy. Alex Smith. Phenomenal coach. So good for him. It's a bummer because I think in this game – the stars did not perform the way you thought they would, you know. And so I think Mahomes was probably the best pick, but by no means did he have a game that made you, in my opinion, look and go, wow, can you believe what he did?
Right. I feel like that happens less than we think it does. I think we've had unfortunately, the evil empire gave us a couple unbelievable games, you know. Where, like, especially when they did Seahawks, Eagles, and Falcons games all kind of right next to each other, you know? But I think a lot of times the Super Bowl can be a little bit anticlimactic, even though it did end up being a really good game by the end of it. I do think that was cool. And then I think Tyreek Hill even had over 100 yards. Mahomes ended up playing well. Damian Williams played well. Sammy Watkins was right around 100. I don't know where Kelsey was at, but he had the touchdown, obviously. Wide open touchdown. Nothing impressive there. And then Nick Bosa was unbelievable for them. I think they played better. I just think that maybe we expected a little bit more because we'd seen these guys all go kind of supernova throughout the course of the playoffs. And it just seemed like both teams played a little scared and both were a little bit nervous to lose the game the entire time until you just let Pat Mahomes hang around too often. And yeah, I agree. If you had let Russ hang around too often, or if you had let Ben hang around too often, like too long, then that's kind of how it goes. But yeah, either way, 24 years old, Pat Mahomes, MVP. really the only one who won it at that age, in my opinion, who was clearly the best player and the focal point of the team. Obviously, Ben, Russ, and Brady winning it young, they were great players on their team, but they're more complementary to the defense. So, impressive run, and it's just funny. That's just what you have to look at, Steelers fans. When you're panicking during the course of the season, it's not always the season of destiny that gets you the Super Bowl run. It's not always when you're just killing every team. Last year was supposed to be the Chiefs' year. Last year, they were the best team in football. They were unstoppable. This year, it was this clunky thing where Mahomes gets injured. They, they're just not really impressive. Lamar Jackson emerges. Everybody's talking about the Ravens, and they just hang around. But one critical thing that did happen is, I think it's something like six out of the last, it might be like 15 of the last 16 Super Bowl participants had a bye in the first round, which they got in the very last week of the season. So that still seems to be as critical as ever.
Yeah, I think it was a I think there have been better quarterback performances over the last several years. I'm thinking Rodgers the year they won the Super Bowl, and that was a while ago. Foles was incredible. Glorious. That was such a great Super Bowl. You know, last night's Super Bowl was fine. It was better than last year, but it was not the Eagles Super Bowl.
Soccer was better than last year, though.
Wow. That is baseball. A low, but no, you're right. No. I think,
it's a sad state of affairs, gentlemen. Even Brady's effort in the loss to the
Eagles was incredible.
To the Eagles was you just saw guys throwing the ball. Now, you know, he fumbled in the last play.
But who's counting? I put that as the cover page of my math test that I gave to my seniors the following day. Just to let them all know, remind them. I had a Patriots fan in my class, and I never put cover pages on. And the cover page of the math test was Tom Brady getting sacked by Brandon Graham, and then the picture below is Tom Brady with his head down, staring at the ground as confetti in green and white fell down from the skies. Oh,
I got that picture of him with his head down engraved onto my headboard, my bed. I look at it before I go to sleep.
I watched. By the way, I think I told you, I don't know if I told, I rewatched the highlights of the Giants beating the Patriots the second time they did it in 2011. Pretty much what fuels me day to day is Patriots losses. Yeah.
You don't say. What, did you have anything written down there that you, I know we're kind of hodgepodge splattering all over the place, but there's just so much to talk about. Are there any points in your notes that you really wanted to get out or that you're seeing like that we missed that maybe we should be talking about? I'm trying to think of anything in particular. I just think the main things that stick out to me are being people, both teams a little bit scared to pull the trigger, and it sort of seemed that San Francisco was a little bit more scared, and that's what lost them the game. What were you thinking, Dad?
I would think that Randy Fichtner
needs to
have watched this game and watch all the motion, and not just like
a new spelling
receiver going across. I mean, there was some really cool. It was like these guys saved these plays up for the last game of the season, assuming they'll be in the Super Bowl. Some of the motion, especially that. What was that called? The twirl when the Chiefs were at the, one or two?
That was amazing.
Four guys looked like synchronized swimmers. They were perfectly synchronized.
It was glorious.
And there was a lot of motion, and not just guys going across behind the line, but, like, wide. And some of those plays didn't pan out, but just the fact they were trying them, and they were taking some risks early on in the game.
I'm so glad you brought that up. That was probably, for me, the most fun part of the first half. Was when they lined up and they spinned, and I don't even know if that changed anything, but I was waiting for J-Lo and Shakira to drop down and get on the field and join them, maybe the Seahawks wide receivers. I was like, this is fun.
It was awesome. Now, they did have one like tight end or an H-back or receiver, I think, motion from left to right, so that part would have changed. So that did do something. Now, the spin, I don't know. But, yeah, these are pretty much the two best motion teams in the league. I think they might be numbers one and two in pre-snap motion. I know that the 49ers are far and away, and we've kind of preached this to the audience a little bit over the past few weeks. But you're right, Dad. Like, these guys still have new plays in this week of the season. And all that does is give your quarterback an opportunity to identify what type of defense is being played based on how they shift and how they have to react to your change in formation. And it also, when you – okay, how about this? The unconventional nature of both of those offenses, the Pat Mahomes offense is weird because when you have God incarnate on a football field, you can just do things that other teams can't. A lot of rush players talk about how Pat Mahomes, he actually doesn't really step up in the pocket that often. He often keeps drifting back, and people aren't used to being like to getting that type of angle on him. It's almost like Le'Veon playing for the Steelers. The line really learned how to block for Le'Veon. And I think the offensive line for the Chiefs know how to block for Mahomes, who can keep fading back because it doesn't matter how far away he is from the target. He's throwing it at least 1,000 miles per hour. Let's be realistic. And it's going to get there. Now, with the 49ers, they have like receivers who can who are running backs and Deebo Samuel and fullbacks who are wide receivers and Juszczyk. And what happens when they do that motion behind the line of scrimmage, you have to be scared when you see Tyreek Hill for the Chiefs or Deebo Samuel for the 49ers go in motion. And if you're a linebacker and they snap the ball and that guy is behind the quarterback, you have to stop for 1 second to consider, is this guy going to come out the back end? Okay, no, he's not. Let me go tackle the running back in the hole. But just that measure of hesitation and confusion gives the offense a little bit of room to operate.
Yeah, going back to the my bookie gambling thing you guys brought up, and Mahomes dropping all the way back. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I think the over under for Mahomes rushing yards is 29 yards, which he had prior to the last possession.
Yeah,
and he just got a little too excited about going backwards before kneeling down, and he lost 15 yards, and all those people lost their money, and I think Vegas came in on top there.
Amazing.
So.
Yeah, well, that's what happens.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Not that it matters anymore. What was the so the play that Kittle was called for interference? Oh, yeah. How far? Was that like 40 yards? I'm trying to find it.
Yeah, it was in between 30 and 40. Offenses. I was going to say this. In real time, that did not look like a penalty. In the replay, that looked like a great call to me, honestly, like because that is the he had his arm fully extended. Sometimes people get away with those. But Brown for the Steelers was amazing at the offensive pass interference on a go route because he would keep his body in close to the defender. So when he would push off, it wouldn't be with the full extension of the arm. Kittle clearly prevented this guy. I guess it was Sorensen. He always gets stiff-armed. Le'Veon Bell ended his life a couple times. That's what I always remember him as. Side note, I always remember Ryan Gosling as the measly cornerback who got benched in Remember the Titans, and then the defense started playing well. Conversely, I always remember Nick Sorensen as, I don't want to curse, Le'Veon Bell's little stiff arm friend. That's what he is. But yeah, I thought that was a pass interference. I think the refs were amazing in this game. There's really nothing that stood out to me in the game. I'm glad they didn't call the Jimmy Garoppolo push out of bounds. There was even like a hit to Patrick Mahomes' face at one point that was like, hey, come on, don't call it. And they didn't. I thought that they were good.
The only thing I wish they would have done was pile on Jimmy G when he got out of bounds and actually somebody would come over and kick them.
Well,
sorry.
Can't have it all.
Not kick them. They fell on them.
So the other play
I'm just not a fan.
Just
is the Williamson touchdown.
Yeah.
The William. All right. Sorry, I'm saying the wrong name. So the Williams touchdown, the 5-yard touchdown he had, I mean, impossible to see on the replay, but I don't know if that was a touchdown. Not that it matters now, but what do you guys think? That leap and
I think it was inconclusive. I think whatever they called, whatever they called on the field is what was going to stand. It's sort of impossible. That my only opinion is that is inconclusive. I think there's an argument for both. I feel like it was a touchdown, though, honestly. That's what I felt like in real time. I was like, oh, that's close, but you got to think at least a fraction of the ball will be over the pylon since it seemed like the reach and the toe touching out of bounds at the same time.
I kind of was shocked there wasn't a better angle. I mean, weird thing to say.
Yeah.
I think it was a touchdown. Actually, live, I did not think it was, but it did seem on the replays they put together that just like the very tip of the ball did like touch the front of the white line. So,
right.
Yeah.
What else? Do we have anything else Super Bowl-wise? I was trying to think. Yeah, what do you think of... Oh, by the way, here's another story. Well, never mind. We don't need to tell that story. It's just the fact that everybody's been here.
Not
a million
the Jets.
Times, but Mahomes was I didn't mean the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, Pat. I meant broadcasters and analysts and such talking about the Niners having the second pick the year that Mahomes got drafted. Everybody makes fun of the Bears for drafting Trubisky, as they should, over Watson and Mahomes. But can you imagine Patrick Mahomes on the 49ers? I don't think, unfortunately, anybody is ever going to break Brady and Belichick's Super Bowl record of 6 Super Bowls. It's just insane. So much of that has to do with Belichick's ability to build a full team and a defense and manipulate the salary cap properly and just all these factors that have to come together. So I think that the Chiefs have a great chance to maybe, you know, get a few, maybe get more than, well, no, because the Steelers are going to get the next 3 in a row. But either way, I think that the Chiefs can get a few of these together. But man, if Shanahan, who has a great offense no matter who's playing quarterback for him, had Mahomes, that's the one scenario, basically this guy who's maybe the best quarterback ever. I know people are going to get mad about that, but the way he plays, if he keeps doing this, he'll be in that conversation. That's the closest thing I could ever think to somebody competing with that Patriots.
Well, thank God they... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I said thank God they drafted, I think, Solomon Thomas.
They did. Yeah.
That's a good segue to my questions of the game, and I have two. The 49ers in next year's Super Bowl, why or why not?
Pat? I'm going to say no, because when's the last time a loser – I mean, just his modern history. I can't think of somebody who lost a Super Bowl and came back the following year. It's hard for me to also look at – their quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, and I know I beat him up, but it's hard to think of him winning a Super Bowl after what we saw yesterday, which kind of verified what I thought about him. You know, it's just weird to think of a quarterback who sinks under pressure winning a Super Bowl. So I think the combination of those two things, they're going to lose their defensive coordinator to steroids because the man needs to calm down, but also to another team. And in the NFC, I think it's a very, you know, it's a strong conference. You get the Seahawks. I would put money that Clowney comes back and, you know, they'll have another year of Russ and, DK Metcalf and,
Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. So if I were to put money down, I would say they don't go back, but they are going to be there to stay.
I'll say this, that Garoppolo to me, he's not terrible. He just falls into that middle group of quarterbacks with Andy Dalton maybe and Derek Carr and Kirk Cousins maybe at the top of that group. He falls in where it's like, yeah, you can win a Super Bowl with him because, I mean, they were up by 10 points in like the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. They were right there. But in order to win it, a lot of things need to go right rather than when you have a really good quarterback like Ben. You're going to win 2 out of 3. And even though it's going to be hard, sometimes you're going to come against Aaron Rodgers. Like even Ben, even Brady, all these guys, like Elway, you can't win them all. But just winning one with an average to above average quarterback is really tough with Garoppolo. What would be insane, I was going to say, if they could find a way to get Cousins, because by the way, they're not going to get Cousins. Double by the way, the reason why Shanahan did not draft Mahomes, one of the main reasons is because he was convinced they were going to get Kirk Cousins, which was all the talk in the media at that time while Kirk Cousins was having his difficulties with Washington and the contract situations over there. But then the Niners ended up going 0-10. It was kind of a panic, and Garoppolo became available. He's like, all right, good enough to rock and roll and plug him in there. He'll do what I say. That's what Kyle Shanahan likes. But yeah, to be able to get back, I'd have to think about the teams and think about everything that's going on, but I just am becoming more and more convinced that getting to the Super Bowl is about locking up that home field advantage. And when you're in a division with Seattle and with the Cardinals might be better, you know, I'm not saying the Cardinals are going to the Super Bowl, but when you have divisional opponents, there's chances that people can beat you and take you out of that number 1 and 2 seed. So that's going to be tough to replicate for them. But damn, I think that they'll still be pretty nasty. And even if they lose Emmanuel Sanders, this draft is loaded with receivers. So I'm going to say yeah. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. The offense is always good for Shanahan. I'm going out on a limb.
All right. So, Pat, we're running low on time because you have dinner waiting, right?
Yeah, I think Mary might kill me soon.
All right, we're going to wrap up your time. We won't ask about it. We can ask about the Chiefs next week. So we're going to let you go. It's been a pleasure looking at your right hand for the last 32 minutes.
That's my leg.
You can do. I didn't want to say that on.
I'm not showing like inappropriate skin or anything. I'm just.
No. He's a modest man, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Pat, thanks for joining us. We have been remiss in not having you on more shows. Obviously, your presence shadows and dwarfs mine, so we're going to have you back on many more
shows.
Please
don't ever say that again, UT. This thing wouldn't happen if it weren't for you.
Yeah, don't ever say that again.
Somebody needed to turn on the on button every week.
So. Everyone,
all right, man. Thanks for joining us.
Trying to drown yourself too much in your tears that football's over.
Disconnect, and we'll send you your check.
Indeed. Godspeed. Go Steelers.
Go Steelers, gents. Happy Butch. Adios.
So Nick, as Pat leaves us, sadly, that was really good. Good analysis. What do you think about, will the Chiefs be back in the Super Bowl next year? Okay, that takes care of that. My votes are no.
Because the black and gold are going back, baby.
No and no.
We already know that.
Hey,
listen,
so,
that. Can you hear me over there? I know that we're having some internet connections with you. That's what happens when we record in a Sawdust Studios, but
I gotta get
damn it if the audio quality isn't beautiful. the Chiefs making it again. Listen, man, they are awesome. And Pat Mahomes, in his second year of starting, he's already this? Like I said, this is maybe the best young quarterback we've ever seen. Marino and Elway are the only two who really dominated at the beginning in the same way that this guy's doing. Like I said before, Ben, Russ, and Brady were good, very good, but they weren't nearly as good as they were in year eight, you know? So Mahomes gonna be around, but it's just hard to win with offense every year. Just because, if for nothing else, like a few key injuries throw the whole thing off. So it really depends on what they keep doing with their defense. I think they have some talent. Obviously, they have a couple of really good guys, but I do think a lot of things have to come together. But granted, again, it comes down to that 1-2 seed. And with the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Raiders, it doesn't strike a lot of fear. So if you can dominate your division like that, they'll definitely be back in the race. But I do think the Steelmen, if Ben recovers, I mean, the offense should bounce back. It's not going to bounce back to killer bees, but it's going to be better than the worst offense in the league, right? And then the defense, if they can continue what they're doing, they might as well be the best defense in the league, if not a top five. The Ravens and Lamar are going to be back. And if they get some weapons for Brady, I'm sorry, but the Patriots are going to be back. So I don't know whose route back is more difficult, but it just seems to me like San Francisco is a much more complete team. So if they could fix a few things up, then they might be right back in there.
So just a quick reflection on the Super Bowl commercials. What was your overall opinion?
Well, I think my opinion of them has been so low for about a decade that I'm just looking for anything. Basically, if I see an actor that I like that's on a commercial, I'm like, I support it in principle. Like with Charlie from Always Sunny doing all those ads about the stain on his shirt, which just totally flopped. None of them getting a single laugh. But like, hey, it's Charlie. I support it. He's great. I liked there was one that was actually legitimately good, but I can't remember it. So maybe I'm exaggerating, but I remember seeing it, stamping it, saying that was actually good. My favorite is the Jason Momoa taking off his skin and his muscles and his sexy hair and all that stuff. That's Aquaman, if you're not familiar, the big beast man. He's a Steelers fan. It just shows the guy, wow, he's got a self-deprecating self-awareness about him, and you got to like that about a man.
And as you know, and probably everybody in the audience knows, I have no knowledge of pop culture. I don't think I cracked a smile the entire time. The moment is past. The 15 yeah. years ago, where they were laugh out loud, funny is gone. Nothing's even amusing. It's all kind of contrived. But what amazes me is they're paying, what, $5.6 million per 30 seconds. I don't know how much it costs to produce these things, but you think they could get a comic writer to write something with some humor in it. I mean, it's just stupid.
Okay, two things. I remember the commercial I liked, and it's the one where they're talking about parking the car over there with Chris Evans. And I always forget her damn name. It's Rachel Dratch from SNL, and they also had John Krasinski from The Office and A Quiet Place, which, by the way, I finally saw. A Quiet Place? Have you seen the previews for that movie? You said you don't know any pop culture, so maybe not. Well, John Krasinski, the guy from The Office, Jim, and his wife. Yeah, he's the man.
Jack Ryan.
His wife, Emily Blunt, they made a movie where it was John's first directing experience. And basically the conceit of the movie is they drop you in the middle of this with no context or anything, but they're a family that's living somewhere outside the city in a post-apocalyptic type world where you can't make any noise because there's these monsters that come and kill you if you make any noise. And I always thought, oh, that looks pretty cool, and it's got John Krasinski, so I'll support it. I saw it the other week. It's a perfect movie. Highly, highly recommend. I was blown away. I thought that it would be all right. It was magnificent. But back to my point, I actually would love to get your opinion on this, on the commercials being good, because it's hard for me to judge, because as I've become an adult, you know, in late teens and then through my 20s here, I have realized that the commercials suck and they're not that funny. But I don't know if part of that's like, well, did they always suck? Was I just young and things were easy? It was an easier laugh for me. But it seems to me like you're backing it up that they were better. What do you even remember why or what it was they had? You were able to have a little bit more teeth maybe in that era, or what the hell happened?
They were funny.
Okay, yeah. I agree.
All right. Hey, look, we're going to do a little something different this week. I have finished a book, and I'd like to offer this as a gift to one of our Steelers Outpost listening audience. It's called Gridiron Genius. It's written by Michael Lombardi, no relation. He has a 30-year, he's worked in the NFL for 30 years. Some as a GM, he's worked extensively with Al Davis, Bill Walsh, and Bill Belichick. I will warn you, it's heavy on Bill Belichick, but it is fascinating. He gives you some insights. It's always fun. And sort of a lot of the do's and don'ts, things that he thinks current coaches do incorrectly. And we're going to give this away to one of our listening audiences. I'm going to limit this, however, to the continental U.S. We have a few books to give away, and I need to maintain the budget. So here's what we're going to do. If you email us at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com, first one to give it to us after noon, that is 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so tomorrow is Tuesday, February 4th, right, Nick? I'm coming right. close on my stats. So tomorrow, we just want to give everybody a chance to download this and hear the podcast and hopefully listen all the way through. So first person to email us after noon tomorrow, Tuesday, February 4th, we'll ship the Gridiron Genius book to you. It's a little dog-eared. I have some notes in the margins. You're going to get a little crack into my head to see how I look at these things. But please do send that to us. Now let's turn our attention to some great news, kind of expected. Troy Polamalu is elected to the Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility.
Yep. What do we call it? Redundant? When we talked about it? Expected. Why do they even vote? Oh, wait, because there's idiots like Peter King out there, and I really wanted to talk to Pete Butch about this, so maybe we can get his opinion next week, because you and I were talking about this today. Peter King, noted Steelers hater, who has said publicly that he refuses to vote any more 70s Steelers into the Hall of Fame because, quote-unquote, there are too many. There's too many Steelers. I'm Peter King. That's how he talks, actually. I've heard him on podcasts before. It's a nightmare. But yeah, he says he won't vote any more 70 Steelers in because there are too many, not realizing that without free agency in that era, you could literally just hoard all the best players, and you might actually just have 10, 12 Hall of Famers on one team, as the Steelers did, which, by the way, he was proven wrong because he said that comment before Schell was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And look, Donnie Schell goes into the Hall of Fame. People disagree with him. So he didn't vote for Troy because he said he knew Troy was a lock to make it with the other voters. So he decided to use one of his votes to try and get one of the other fringe candidates like Tony Baselli into the Hall of Fame. And that he should not be allowed to vote anymore. Trying to rig the system, not voting for the best guys, and it's a weird display of arrogance and like ego to me. Like Peter King thinks he knows more than other people. Listen, Peter King has been in the league for a long time and he does know football, but by no means is he this. I mean, just whatever you think about him, I don't mind him when he's on PFT and stuff like that. It's fine. It's good for conversation and stuff like that. But I just think this further solidifies what we have talked about in the Hall of Fame and the crap and the people that they have voting on this. Maybe it needs to be a revolving committee or something, because that seems legitimately corrupt to me, and I can't think of it any other way.
Yeah, it feels like gamesmanship. It was a fait accompli. His vote wouldn't count one way or another, and he's going to use it for another purpose. I agree with you. The whole thing, you know, it's like a student council election. There's very little meaning. It's a popularity contest. Everybody's about himself. But I think there was another – well, I know that there was another moment in time that was voted as the greatest moment in NFL history, and that is the Immaculate Reception, the 1972 Woo. AFC Divisional Playoff game, Steelers against the hated Oakland Raiders. The snake, Kenny Stabler, just run for a 30-yard touchdown that gave his team a 7-6 lead in the seventh inning of that football game. The Steelers found themselves 4th and 10 from their own 40-yard line with a mere 22 seconds remaining when Terry Bradshaw drops back. He is chased out of the pocket. Somehow, maintaining poise, throws the ball downfield to a running Frenchie Fuqua, who collides with Jack Tatum, and the ball rebounds off of Jack Tatum. There's no doubt about that. That's when right. You look at the no film doubt. Again. And Franco catches the ball and runs. Bounds. I say ran. He bounded. If you look at this replay again, he's a gazelle on the Serengeti. 60 yards, capping a 13-7 win for the Pittsburgh Football Steelers.
Not only did it help popularize the game of NFL football to mainstream audiences by showing people how exciting it could be, but it also kickstarted the greatest dynasty in the history of sports, the Steelmen. That's right. Ignore everything that I've said about the modern-day Patriots. It's the Steelmen for life. Speaking of PFT, I was talking about Pro Football Talk a minute ago. Florio and Sims had a guest on during Super Bowl week, none other than Terry Bradshaw. And Terry Bradshaw said Franco pointed out to him just this week that that pass was his first NFL playoff touchdown pass. Terry Bradshaw's. So Terry's first ever playoff touchdown pass is the Immaculate Reception. How cool is that? Man.
And remember,
it's a good start.
We have yet to run this guy down, but we know the guy who has the football.
We do. And we will find you.
I'm not going to say it here because I don't want anybody getting to him first, but he lives, well, he has an office in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania.
You cannot hide from us.
And the ball is in a vault. Hopefully I get to him before he dies, but it is a cool story. So we're going to try and next time I'm up there, try to get an interview with him and hold on the podcast.
Over a lifetime of misbehavior, we have developed a very specific set of skills. We will use these skills to find you and return that ball to its rightful place on the top of Mount Olympus.
Hey, so we know this wasn't about the Steelers, but Nick, you did a great job of working on the Steelers at every, especially Ben, at every potential opening.
So it wasn't on purpose. It's just natural flow of conversation. I think any other good American would do the same.
I try to do that at work every day, at least twice.
Please, continue.
It's hard to work in Roethlisberger. It has no alternative meeting, so people look at you askance.
We'll have to work on that alternative meeting.
Thank you for joining us this week. Remember the contest. Gridiron Genius is yours if you first person to email us at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Starting point is noon tomorrow, Tuesday, February 4th, and we'll ship that out to you. Otherwise, Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Thanks for listening. Until next week, go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.